Our agenda, and we are going to start with Senate Bill 489, which allows, which the council will describe. Try to stay out of this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, currently Public Utility Commission agency appeals in contested cases do not currently go directly to the Court of Appeals as they do in other administrative law cases. Instead, they are first heard by the Marion County Circuit Court. Under this bill, contested cases would move directly to the Court of Appeals under the Administrative Procedure Act. Since the time of the writing of the SMS, we have received a fiscal impact statement that states there is a minimal expenditure impact.
Thank you very much. We have three people signed up, Paul Lipscomb, Judge Lipscomb, Jay Dudley from PGE, and Ginny Lang is signed up but without saying favor or oppose. I assume you're in favor of this? No. Okay. We will take Judge Lipscomb and Jay Dudley as our first panel. Welcome to the committee. Why don't you start, Judge?
Thank you.
And feel free to leave after your testimony if you need to get out of here.
Thank you for that as well. I appreciate the courtesies of the chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Lipscomb. I'm the presiding judge in Marion County Circuit Court, and I see many faces that I recognize here today. And committee counsel has already described the gist of the bill, and I'm not going to prolong this unnecessarily. I'm submitting some written testimony that really gives my best shot at explaining what we're trying to do here once again. This should be a very non-controversial bill. The appellate review of PUC cases in Marion County Circuit Court is really the only kind of function of that of that type that we perform. For what I think is just simply odd historical reasons, contested case appeals from PUC cases have come to the Marion County Circuit Court by direction of the legislature before they go on to the Court of Appeals and eventually to the Oregon Supreme Court. These are not a lot of cases. We only get four or five of these a year, about nine cases a biennium, but they tend to be very big cases. What I talk to my peers about is take-home cases, because they're kind of cases that oftentimes go home with you for a weekend or two, because they're just very complex, long, involved records, and often take a lot of judicial work as well as staff time and a fair amount of court time as well. And they go on for years. And it's not because of delay in the court. They seem to go through our court, up on appeal, often to the Oregon Supreme Court, but not always. And then from the appellate courts, they go back through our court for further processing before they go back to the PUC, often on remand. And then often there's a further appeal after remand, and the process gets repeated again. In the early 90s, the Court of Appeals decided a couple of decisions indicating that in accordance with their view of part of the statutory framework for this appellate function that we perform, that the Court of Appeals was going to be reviewing PUC contested case appeals coming to them based on the agency record alone. In other words, what we do in Marion County Circuit Court, once a notice of appeal is filed from our decision, kind of drops off the face of the earth and just enters a big black hole. And when a case goes to the Court of Appeal, they don't review our work. What they review, once again, is the agency work. So there's really no value added by the step passing through Marion County Circuit Court. It's an expensive review process. It takes time. It delays the ultimate resolution of these often rather important cases. It adds expense to the taxpayers. It adds expense to the ratepayers. And the government, in one form or another, either the taxpayers or the ratepayers are paying all the lawyers in the courtroom. And there are often quite a number of them. We would like to see the process streamlined and to have you folks eliminate what's become a relatively wasteful step in government and to streamline the appeals process so that it goes directly in contested case hearings from the agency to the Court of Appeals, which is the normal process for contested case appeals in every other state agency in this state. We really don't see any reason for special treatment in PUC cases, and we would very much like to be out of the special treatment business here. We're a very busy court, and I don't mean to be facetious about that. You folks have over the years seen fit to give us a lot of extra business in Marion County, and we're glad that you think of us so highly, but there are about 70 different statutory provisions that invoke the jurisdiction of the Marion County Circuit Court in preference to other jurisdiction that exists out there. And we're happy to do the work. It's often very interesting and very exciting work, and it's I've been really grateful for the opportunity. But this really is an area where we add nothing at all, but we're required to process these cases in a craftsman-like way nonetheless. And so you can relieve us of at least some of the extra burden that we have in Marion County Circuit Court as compared to other circuit courts. We get no extra resources for performing that function, and we'd appreciate it if you could support us by relieving us of this extra responsibility.
Thank you very much, Judge. Are there questions of Judge Lipscomb from the committee?
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Walker.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that the judge is right. We give them a lot of extra business over in Marion County Court, and that's in addition to your regular load. Is that not
yes,
correct?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. So I just don't understand the logic of how this ever happened in the first instance. It'd be kind of interesting to do the historical perspective on that. But I appreciate your dilemma, and I appreciate trying to save you time because I know I've given you a lot of work. And I think we should probably try and relieve them some of that responsibility.
Judge, I did want to ask you, you said that the decision to use the PUC record rather than the circuit court record came out of a Supreme Court decision or a Court of Appeals decision?
Court of Appeals decision, and they're cited in the written testimony that I've provided you with here today. The statute, ORS 756598, I think can fairly be read as applying strictly to the trial court, or it can be read more broadly as applying both to the trial court and to the appellate court. And the Court of Appeals chose to regard it as applying to both the trial court and the appellate court. And in doing so, we pretty much dropped out of any useful function once the notice of appeal is filed from our decision.
Okay. Thank you very much. Other questions from the committee? Thank you, Judge. You can be excused now if you need to get back to court. Otherwise, you're welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to stay and listen to the rest of the testimony in this bill anyway, and thank you very much for your services today.
Madam Chair, I just wondered if the judge was interested in getting the Texas Pacific Group deal. There's at least 15 feet of documents in that one, Your Honor.
You're anticipating my question from the next witness. This is a good segue. Please introduce yourself. Thank you.
Dare I introduce myself? My name is Jay Dudley. I'm Associate General Counsel with Portland General Electric Company. And appreciate very much the opportunity to offer comments to this committee this afternoon. PGE supports SB 489. Just briefly, we echo the comments of Judge Lipscomb. The proposed changes will cause judicial review of PUC decisions to be consistent with judicial review of the decisions of other agencies under the Administrative Procedures Act. For those matters considered contested case proceedings, that will mean that appeals will be heard by the Court of Appeals. Under the current procedure, the vast majority of appealed matters are now heard by the Court of Appeals after also having been heard by the Circuit Court. Having the matters go directly to the Court of Appeals, like appeals from decisions in other agencies, is appropriate and a more efficient use of limited government resources. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the timing of this bill is very interesting because there has just been a decision, a very major decision by the PUC that is likely to, potentially, well, maybe not, depending on the effective date, but, you know, potentially cases like that could be affected by a bill like this. And have you thought about, would this apply to say if Texas Pacific appealed the PUC ruling, is that the type of case that it would apply to?
I think, as I understand the bill, Madam Chairman, it would depend upon the timing of the effective date of this bill versus the effective date of a particular appeal, and I can't presuppose when those dates might.
Yeah, kind of mid question, I sort of realized about the effective date. But in the future, if this were to happen a year from now, that's the sort of case that we
very much so a contested case in which the. For example, the proceeding that the Commission had with consideration of the application of Texas Pacific would, after the enactment of this legislation, would go then directly to the Court of Appeals.
And including the, I believe it was 10 feet or
15 feet.
15 feet of documentation would have to be carted over to the Circuit Court.
Well, Madam Chairman, hopefully, if the advocates are doing their job, they will direct the court's attention to the sections of that 15 feet are the most appropriate to the positions that they're advocating, so that the court won't be having to go through all of it.
I was raising that question to make a point.
Madam Chair, are we going to be hearing from the PUC on this bill?
Well, the PUC just happens to be present in this room today.
I was
going to ask the Honorable PUC if they had anything to add to this.
Well, I have a question for them, so I would like them to come.
Well, Senator Walker has a question, so that sounds like a command performance. Mr. Beyer.
I know Senator Beyer, former Senator Beyer, does want to just stay in the shadows, but I'm going to bring him up.
Madam Chair, Senator Walker was always happy to answer your questions.
Would you identify yourself for the record?
For the record, I am Lee Beyer, Chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission.
Okay. May I ask my question? Thank you. The question that the chair raised was interesting about whether this would apply to the current case that you just were on the front pages all about, the Texas Pacific Group matter. It does not have an emergency clause. It does not have a retroactivity clause. So if this bill, as Judge Lipscomb says, send it over to the House as soon as possible so we can get it out this session finally. If we do finally get it out this session, it wouldn't apply to this most recent ruling. So what do you think, first of all, I guess I should say, wouldn't you agree that it would not apply to the Texas Pacific deal?
Well, my understanding is it would not, because I believe that without an emergency clause, it would not take effect until January.
Right. So that's my second question, because I had to ask the softball one first, like a good lawyer.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, Senator, so I'm going to...
I live and breathe with them. So the second question then, Commissioner Beyer, is if this bill had an e-clause and it also had a retroactive to January 1st of 2005 clause, would that be helpful or would that complicate matters in your life?
I suspect it would unnecessarily complicate it.
Okay. I'm just trying to help the court, because I think this is a good bill, and I can't for the life of me figure out who has been stopping this all these years. But
Judge Lipscomb might have a different answer to that. His court, not mine.
But I am just trying to save the court, and if we can divert all this, the best deal would be if TPG would just go away. That's my personal opinion. But they have the right to appeal if they wish.
That's outside the scope of the bill.
And that's outside the scope of the bill. But, I'm just trying to make life easier. If you think it'll complicate the bill, then I'm not going to push it.
Thank you. Senator Pruzanski?
I guess, Senator Walker, if we really wanted to try to help expedite something for the court, maybe just the emergency clause itself. I think the complication is if you try to make it retro, and if they, meaning any petitioner, wanted to petition the court before that time, I think we'd throw a monkey wrench into that. But if we put emergency clause, and if the House went through quick enough before someone perfected their appeal, filed it, then I think we can accomplish that. And I would suggest that if we really wanted to, say, take the burden off the court, no matter what petitioners that might be coming forward, that's probably the best way to do it. And that way, whoever comes in after the effective date to perfect their appeal would be under that new system.
You're referring to an emergency clause.
Just the emergency, clause.
Counsel, did you have anything to add to this discussion on applicability?
I think everything else was covered then.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you very much, Commissioner Beyer. Okay, Ginny Lang signed up. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your indulgence. My name is Ginny Lang. I represent Quest Communications. And after the long and rich history of this bill, I felt that it just wouldn't be right if I didn't at least make a few comments. I couldn't quite bring myself to mark my X beside neutral, but I'm probably as close to being neutral this time as I possibly could ever be. I do have a few comments, though, that I would like to share with you. One of the reasons that my company has opposed this bill several times in the past is exactly to the point that both Judge Lipscomb and Mr. Dudley made, and that is that pieces of the Administrative Procedures Act apply to the Public Utility Commission, but not all of it. And we have suggested on several occasions that the time might be right to consider the procedures of the PUC in light of the entire APA and not continue to sort of pick and choose which processes they want to follow and which they don't. Staff in the past at the PUC has said that they would be more than willing to go through that exercise. They would like to do it outside the confines of this bill, and I certainly appreciate that. To that end, there is another bill moving through the process this time, Senate Bill 17, which seeks to set up a task force during the interim to look at Chapter 759, which is the telecommunications set of statutes. And I might suggest that this would be a topic that we might ask to have considered in light of that interim committee study. And then finally, and obviously there are many people who have looked at this bill other than me, but I did notice on page 11, section 17, subsection 6, it would appear that the circuit court is still included in that section, and it may need to, somebody might need to look at that just to make sure if the bill is moving through that that's language that still belongs there, and if not, that.
Would you give me that
slide
again? Page 11.
Madam Chairman, it's page 11, section 17, sub 6, at line 26 and 27. Mm-hmm. Still, it refers to the circuit court.
Correct. That's a good catch. Thank you. Maybe, counsel, you can take note of that. And
thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate it. Do we have questions?
Senator Walker?
Yes, thank you. Ms. Lang, just for historical purposes, I threw a question out to Commissioner Beyer the other day, but he looked like a deer in the headlights when I told him about it. But I was down at a conference and found out that the Arizona PUC is a fourth branch of government. It's totally elected, totally separate, not appointed by the governor. And I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting when you talk about reviewing which set of administrative rules they're subject to and which ones they're not. We might want to talk about that, too. I don't think the current commission likes that idea, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
Better watch out, Senator Walker. You're going to get appointed to that interim task force.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I've got plenty on my plate.
Thank you.
It's just history. I mean, did you have a comment about that, Ms. Lang? Have you worked with PUCs in other states?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, there are elected public utility commissions in other Quest states, I have never worked with them, but certainly colleagues of mine in the company have.
Okay. Thank you. Did you have any comment, if we do move this bill, on the subject of an emergency clause?
Madam Chair, no.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions, Ms. Lang? Thank you very much. Okay. We will, I think there are some things that we want to consider in this bill, an emergency clause and the correction that Ms. Lang was kind enough to point out. So we will not move this bill today. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 489, and we will open a hearing on Senate Bill. Okay. How about 276 and 277? We'll try those together. If we need to sever them, we can. But for the moment, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 276 and 277. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Both 277 and 276 deal with trusts. Senate Bill 276 would allow trustees to sever trusts unless expressly prohibited by the terms of the trust itself. Each new trust under the measure must be held and administered on identical terms as the trust from which it was severed, and the trustee under this measure may take into account different tax characteristics of each trust in making administration decisions. The measure also would allow the trustee to segregate, or that is to say to separate trust accounts in the same trust, also for purposes of different tax treatment. Meanwhile, Senate Bill 277 modifies terminology in the Oregon Uniform Transfers to Minors Act, and it essentially clarifies that a transfer can be made of custodial property at any time before beneficiary reaches the age 25, and that is to clarify some inconsistent language that suggests that the transfer can not be made until the beneficiary reaches 21.
Thank you. And we have signed up on both of these bills, Bill Brewer. Mr. Neville, you're welcome to join him if you'd like.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
I am Bill Brewer. I'm an attorney. I've been
practicing law for about 20 years now. I'm a partner with law firm Hirshner Hunter, and I am on the State Bar Executive Committee for State Planning and Administration. And Joe Leary's introduction to these is exactly correct as to what they do.
That's reassuring. Thank you.
We always need to test them.
Yeah. The instigating factor for the Senate bill, and I've forgotten which number is to which bill, but it's 276 is severing the trust. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. The reason for doing that is that as a result of the change in the federal tax law, the Oregon inheritance and estate tax is no longer moves with the federal estate tax. And so we have a problem in estate planning, particularly for married couples. In the context of a married couple, the goal is to avoid any estate tax until the death of the second of them. We're not trying to get out of paying estate and inheritance tax, but the law has always been written in such a way that a married couple can plan their estate so that the tax is deferred until the second death, and there's good reason for doing that. And Oregon endorsed that reasoning when the legislation was passed in 2003 that explained how the Oregon inheritance tax would work now that it's no longer following the federal estate tax. But one of the problems we have is that for federal estate tax purposes, we create a trust on the first death. And for federal estate tax purposes, we want that trust to hold as much money as is possible to pass tax-free. And that amount of money is greater than the amount of money that can pass tax-free under Oregon law. So we have a trust that has two separate functions, and what we would like to be able to do is separate that single trust into two trusts so that the two functions of the trust are separate. And you can do that today under Oregon law. That's not a problem. A trustee has the power to do that, but only with court approval. And the court approval obviously adds a lot of cost to trust administration that in this case seems unnecessary. So the purpose of this law is to just simplify the solution to the problem that was created when the Oregon inheritance tax and the federal estate tax moved in different directions.
Thank you very much. I was in a conversation here. Did you cover 277 as well?
I have not. I was just addressing 276.
Are there questions on 276 before he moves on? Thank you. Why don't you move in the other one now?
Okay. With respect to 277, there is a statutory trust called a custodianship that is created under the Uniform Transfers to Minors Act. And that's a very handy trust for people who don't need to have an elaborate estate plan, don't have sufficient wealth to pay for an elaborate estate plan. Many of you may have used it for your own children when you're making cash gifts to them when they're young, maybe toward education or something. But they're used at death, too. And so if somebody dies and wants to leave a grandchild a small amount of money, but the grandchild is too young to receive it, they can do it through a Uniform Transfers to Minors Act account, which sets up a custodianship. In the last legislative session, the custodianship was allowed to run to age 25, which is very handy because a lot of kids at age 21 really aren't able to handle, say, a $50,000 trust coming into their hands. They'll buy a new car with it, but they won't necessarily do what their grandparent intended. So last year that age was extended to age 25. But unfortunately the word minor was left in the statute. And so we have this conflict between the definition of the word minor, which is somebody under 21, and the intended termination date of the custodianship, which is age 25. So what 277 does is it removes the word minor wherever that's appropriate and replaces it with the word beneficiary. It still uses the word minor where minor is the appropriate term. And so I regard that as just a technical correction to what was done in the last session, and certainly non-controversial.
Okay. Has this caused any problems with the unclear language?
To my knowledge, it has not yet caused any trouble, but certainly practitioners are wondering how it is intended to work. Valerie Vollmar, who is an estate planning professor at the law school here in Salem, has suggested that this could be a problem, but she suggested a way around it. Frankly, I think it's better just to correct the statute and eliminate the confusion.
Right. We prefer to do that. Thank you very much. Other questions on this bill? Senator Prezansky.
Yep. Just want to thank Bill for coming up. I've known Bill for many years. A great attorney in Eugene. And
thanks
for one being up here and two volunteering your time to the board.
Ditto. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there other questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much. You're the only witness, so we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 276 and 277. And this doesn't happen very often in the same day, but I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 276. Senator Starr, do you have any views on Senate Bill 276?
Yes, good bill should pass.
Good. How about a motion, Senator Starr?
I move Senate Bill 276 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 276 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Objections? So ordered. Senator Prezansky, would you like to carry this pair from
sure.
your colleague in Eugene? Okay, that I'm getting ahead of myself on 277, because now I will open a work session on Senate Bill 277. Senator Starr.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 277 to the floor, Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 277 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Are there objections? So ordered. Senator Prezansky, did you want to carry this half of the pair?
I'll be glad to.
Okay. Their bills are in very good hands. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 276 and 277. and announce that there's still work being done on Senate Bill 229 and 234, so we will put those over until Mondays. We will put these off till further notice. My counsel asked me to do so. They will be subject to the 48-hour notice when they return to this committee. And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 229 and 234. And then the rest of the committee, we will spend the next hour and 10 minutes on announcing the logistics for penalty.
Tell me about it.
We all have, Heidi Moab has kindly put detailed instructions and memos in all of our boxes. On the Pendleton itinerary, basically, Cliff notes, the first van leaves at 1 o'clock and the second van leaves at 2 o'clock tomorrow. But more importantly, all the luggage has to be in the cargo van by noon because there's not going to be enough room in the regular vans unless people sit on each other's laps. And we already had a training session on that, and we can't do that. So we're stuck with the cargo van. Be sure to get your luggage there by noon. I just did that for you, Sandra Starr. Be sure to get your luggage there by noon at the very latest. And that will be in the members' garage downstairs between 10 and 11:45 p.m.
Okay.
And then we have a wonderful, thrilling event, dinner tomorrow night at Raphael's, which is, I've been there, it's a great restaurant in Pendleton. And then the local bar.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prozanski.
I'm wondering if we need to be on the record for this. Or if we just, I mean, you're just giving us information. As
I am. As an abundance of caution with the open meeting law, okay. I stayed on the record, but we probably don't. So we will adjourn Senate Judiciary Committee and spare future historians the logistics of our trip to Pendleton. Okay.
I figured.